Hi, welcome to the 12th House Podcast. I'm Michelle, your co-host and the head witch in charge here at Holisticism. Delighted to have you. Welcome back to the squirrels who have been here before, to our new squirrels. Hi, how's it going? The 12th House Podcast is a little corner of the internet where we bring together creativity, inspiration, intuition, spiritual shit, the metaphysical, the practical, tactical stuff that comes to running a business. And we bring it to you so that you can do your sacred work, so you can self-actualize, so you can be the biggest you could possibly be. It's really fun. You're going to like it, I think. Anyway, let's get into today's episode. Hi, Katie.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. I'm at that stage of hair grow out where I really liked my hair. And now if I don't sleep on it perfectly, it does look like I'm taking a second grader to soccer practice, like all the time. My hair gets a little mom zone. But other than that, I'm feeling great.
You know how I feel about your hair. I mean, we don't have time to fully cover that. So what are we talking about today?
We are talking about a concept that honestly, you and I and everyone probably listening has some familiarity with this concept, but I wanted to bring it up because I think it's really important for anyone who's trying to deliver a message that they feel passionately about to other people. And this mental model, this framework, this philosophy on Friday is called the curse of knowledge. Katie, have you heard of the curse of knowledge?
I hadn't. I mean, when I read it, I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense. I didn't have a name to a face, so to speak, but I had experienced it. I hadn't heard it in so many words.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like, you know, Indiana Jones and the Curse of Knowledge, like a little mystical or a little spooky, but it's a really common framework or thing that people experience, mental model that people experience. Basically, once you've acquired a wealth of knowledge or an expertise in your craft or in an area or on a concept or topic like astrology or writing a book or journaling or podcasting, you're a genius, right? Everything that we all work towards is becoming better and better and better at our crafts, you know, spending 10,000 hours practicing. But there's a catch when we get to that genius level or that expertise level. Sometimes in our geniusness, if that's a word, we lose our relatability to the people around us. And it can actually be a curse because we're not able to communicate that expertise or that knowledge to an average person or to, honestly, anyone who's below us expertise-wise, which means that we can't really look like experts to anyone that we're talking to because we're not able to communicate our message. It's kind of like this phenomenon where we get so immersed in our own expertise that we forget what it's like to not know what we know. Have you ever experienced that before, Katie?
So many times. And I think when I was thinking about my experience of this, reading about the curse of knowledge from your notes, one thing came to mind, and I think we'll get into this more, but the things that I take for granted that I'm good at naturally, that come naturally to me, that I know how to do without, I didn't necessarily like have someone sit down and teach me. I accumulated the knowledge. I forget that other people don't have that. Mm-hmm. And when I've been tasked with having to just simply like explain what I did, I'm unable to do it. I become like a robot. And one of the things, like I'm in a different city than I live in. But one of the things that's surprising is I'm very good at navigating walking cities. Like I'm very good. I use my phone, of course, but the subway, I'm very good at, and I think just, you know, as you are, like from living in New York, any city we go to, we're kind of good at that. And I take for granted that other people, when I explain that, I don't explain, oh, but when you leave the subway, you need to look at which way the train is going. And it's best to look at like which door to go out. Like there's all these little steps that I don't even clock because I've just done it a bunch.
Right. It's almost like, well, duh. Like, yeah, you don't even think about the process because it's second nature to you or it's innate to you. And, you know, we maybe like get caught up in the jargon or the abbreves or, you know, the shorthand for whatever our industry language is. And that makes it even more alienating to anyone that we're talking to about it. I have this really good quote. There's this book, I don't know if you've read it, called Made to Stick, Why Some Ideas Survive and Others Die. And this concept of the curse of knowledge is like sort of core to this whole book, and like why these two brothers who wrote this book, Chip and Dan Heath, why they think there are certain ideas that are super sticky and why other ideas that are maybe even better but aren't sticky, like why they don't work. And so Chip and Dan Heath say, lots of us have expertise in particular areas. Becoming an expert is something, in something means that we become more and more fascinated by nuance and by complexity. And that's when the curse of knowledge kicks in and we start to forget what it's like to not know what we know. I know for me, this is the story of my fucking life, dude. The more I adore something, the more I get sort of like caught up in the fabric of it, the tiny nuance and details, the things that probably no one else really cares about. And I become so hyper-focused or fixated on these like sort of tiny concepts that I sometimes lose the forest for the trees when I'm explaining why I care about it to somebody else. They're like, this is boring and you're a little bit crazy. And I'm like, but can't you see how everything's connected? And I'm certain that there are people who are listening to this episode who could probably relate to this. And here's why we want to understand the curse of knowledge in and of itself, but also how it potentially affects us as artists and creatives and entrepreneurs, as people that are trying to share something with the world, whether it's a message or our art or, I don't know, the way that we do our hair in the morning. All noble pursuits. So first, the curse of knowledge prevents you from being able to get people to be stoked about what you're up to. Basically, it prevents you from being able to convey your ideas because you're so far ahead from who you're talking to, which means that it's going to be really difficult for you to market your product or to sell your ideas to people like investors or newbies who could potentially buy it from you. You're so stuck in the sort of minutiae of your offer that you forget to go back and tell people, well, here's what this offer is going to do for you. This is how it's going to change your life. This is how you can use it in your life. And instead we're caught up on, but I'm going to give you this bonus, or there's this really cool chapter on XYZ detail. And we forget to connect the dots for people. This is why this is going to impact or change your life.
I told you before we started recording, I've used this in conversation since we started talking about this curse. And a really close friend of mine, one of the people I've known the longest, she started a company. She was always good at cooking. She actually went to fashion school, but just enjoyed cooking. And she was a real wellness, she's making green smoothies right alongside with me. She was actually I worked at Kind, like the bars, as you know, Michelle. And she was the first employee that I hired. And we, of course, became great friends. And we kept in touch. And she would always make food for me all the time. I'd be like working away on my computer and she would make me food. And then she starts this private chef company. She ends up moving to Boulder, Colorado for athletes. So she has all of these athlete clients and, you know, in hockey and basketball and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I was going to try to name some, which I definitely can't do. And then she did that in all sorts of markets. So then she has a team of chefs that she trains, that she makes menus for, that she develops like her style of cooking that's very specific and uses only these ingredients and the standard of whatever. She gets married. Her husband now works in the business with her. And she expands to LA. And I'm like, who do I know that's a chef? I have another really close friend from New York who happens to also be a private chef. She lives in Topanga. I connect them. She becomes one of her chefs. So now she has all these chefs, all of these systems. They use Slack, which I now know about as well, because we use it here too. They use, I'm trying to get them on Notion, but they're, you know, they're using all of these systems, right? And I'm speaking with her last night and she's saying that she wants to have a baby soon and she is just really wanting to get out of the business. And they hired my friend Carolina to be the chef coordinator. So now Carolina does all of the coordinating with all the chefs. So Amanda doesn't do that. They hired someone to do the menu development, which is all of that. And then they hired someone to do, I'm forgetting something else. So basically there's now four people on the team. And she's speaking to me of like, I really want to be out of the business, but it's just, I cannot seem to get anyone to, they're great people, but no one does it like I do. No one cares like I do. No one can understand what I'm telling them, even though I go through all the steps. And I could just hear her frustration. I could hear her frustration. And I had thought that this episode was like up, even though it hadn't been recorded. And I was like, actually, I have an episode of Holisticism I'm going to send you. And then I was like, oh, wait, we haven't even recorded it yet. So I then had to explain to her the curse of knowledge because I was like,
actually, I have an outline for you to read.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's so interesting to hear her. Like, she was like, that's exactly what's happening. Like, her eyes lit up of this is, mm-hmm. she's not even clocking all of these things that she did. Cause sure, there's like maybe some level to it that is, you know, the care, the level of care of like, it's your own thing. She really built this up from the ground up, but also like truly just like missing little bits of knowledge that she's not aware of.
Oh, great example. And I'm like, oh, have her call me. I'll help her with maternity leave stuff. I'm happy to help her with this. But you brought up a really good example that I didn't even really think of when it comes to being a manager and teaching other people to do what you do. I was thinking more of like as a teacher or an educator or a guide. But I love this because it totally like layers in with SOPs, which we talk about in system spells and in Notion and in the North Node, but it's totally true. You know, most of the time when we sit down to explain something to someone, step-by-step process of how we do things, we really start with like step 37, as opposed to starting with step number one, because we don't consciously think about step number one. For example, like coming up with podcast ideas. Like if we really were to say, okay, what is the very first step in thinking about a podcast idea? It wouldn't be write out 10 ideas. It actually would be go look at the last couple of podcasts that have gone up and rate on a scale of 1 to 10. Were they fun to record? Did they take a long time for us to research? Did we enjoy them? Did they do well? Think about what all of that means. Aggregate that information. What are you pulling from that information? Based on those trends, what are some more, you know, concepts? You know, like there are so many more steps that we kind of just do offhandedly in our own brains that we take for granted because we're used to doing this stuff, right? And same thing if you're a doer, if you've created a company, you just kind of do it, right? And you don't really know how to like, quote unquote, capture your secret sauce. And really the practice to capturing the secret sauce is just going all the way to step number one. And like, if you had to explain it to a five-year-old, how would you explain how to do it? Or if you had to explain to a robot how you do what you do, and some people will take offense to that. But if you had to explain to a robot how to do what you do, where would you start? And I think that this is a slightly different flavor because I'm sure that there are people who are like, well, a robot can't do what I do. And yes, that's true. But there is very little, even creatively, that can't be systematized. Like there are very few things in the world that can't be systematized. Now, the details and instructions might need to be really, 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 really detailed and specific and clear and minute, but you could ostensibly create someone a sort of recipe or a to-do list or an instruction or a guide to thinking the way that you think and making decisions the way that you make them. It would be really challenging for you to try and write all that down, but you probably could do it. It just would take a really long time. That's a bit tangential, but yes, the curse of knowledge, exactly. Yeah, your friend, it sounds like she already knows so much to dumb it down or explain, not even dumb it down, but to go a little bit more elementary and explain why she thinks what she thinks. It's frustrating for her that other people don't see the world the way that she does. And that happens a lot, right? Especially as we get better and better at our roles and our jobs, our priorities become really clear and obvious. But for somebody else, especially who's brand new, that's far less obvious and clear. So number one problem with the curse of knowledge is that it inhibits your ability to connect with people and get them as excited as you are about whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's building a company or orienting yourself towards a goal or, you know, marketing a product that you're excited about. But the curse of knowledge also like can prevent us from feeling that whimsy and imagination and freedom when it comes to planning out our next steps, because we know so much, we kind of assume that we know how things are going to go. we assume because we've had experience that, oh yeah, when I launch a book, this is how it goes. I've already launched 3 books. Or when I onboard a new client, it's usually going to go about like this. Or when I set up for an event, I can expect that this number of people will be there and it'll probably look like this if I follow all the instructions, right? But, you know, there's so like, what is that landmark idea? landmark, put an asterisk next to landmark forum because that's a culty conversation for another day. But there's one concept where they say, you know, my fist is everything that I know. Everything outside of my fist is what I don't know. And there's way more stuff outside of fist. There's way more that I don't know, right? And we kind of forget that when we're an expert in something because we feel so solid and secure. And that's great. We're not dealing with imposter syndrome, which fucking rocks. It rocks to feel confident. But we can put our blinders on, I guess, in a way when we feel like we know exactly how the path is going to lay itself out for us because we've walked it so many times before. There's always a possibility, a potential, a percentage that things are going to go differently than we expected. And that's both intimidating and liberating because that means that there's still unknowns out there.
Yeah. And I think it can be frustrating. Like there can just be a real frustration to this because I've found this in relationships a lot where someone's just asked me like a very gentle question of like laundry related or, you know, dishes related, right? Where you're like, yeah, it's like this, of course, obviously. But I think it's like when our brain goes, obviously, that's often when curse of knowledge has come in, you know, and it's not obvious to everybody if you have to use that word usually.
Mm-hmm. Yep, totally. One thing about me is that I am very, very lazy. And it's confusing because I'm really good at working really hard. But in my core, in my soul, I'm really a slug. I'm a slug on the sofa. That is my true calling. And the more often I can be blob, the happier I tend to be. And so, you know, running a business doesn't necessarily like work cohesively, isn't necessarily synergistic with big blob energy, but I found it's actually like more doable than one might think. And that's why I created Creators Cashing In. Creators Cashing In is one of our Notion for Magical Baddies classes, meaning it's taught live inside of Notion and you get tons of Notion templates to go along with the course. It's our Notion for Magical Baddies class that I created for the creators among us who make content and want to get paid for it. If you're a writer, if you're a podcaster, if you're a teacher, a guide, if you're someone who wants to run a community or has a community, but you haven't figured out how to make it a fair energetic exchange for the work that you do, Creators Cashing In is for you. And really, like I said, I'm lazy. The reason I created it is because these businesses, while so fun, can be really emotionally exhausting and really just like time intensive, especially if you're unorganized and you don't see how everything comes together. And for the nonlinear thinkers among us, myself included, that part, getting it all organized, prepped, systematized, can be really, really difficult. And in the muddling through every single day and always feeling like you're behind deadline and like you're not making enough money and like you're not sure if the next step that you're making is the right one, not only does that just objectively suck, scientifically, it makes your creativity plummet by, you know, at least 400%, allegedly. And the point of Creators Cashing In is to help creatives like you and me, nonlinear thinkers, get organized, get clear, and monetize the incredible content and knowledge that they're already sharing with the world. So good news, Creators Cashing In is open, doors are opening, and I would love to have you in the course. I won't be teaching this again for at least another 6 months, but it's one of my favorite things to teach, and there's a ton that I've added into the course this time around. So if you're thinking of running a digital course, selling digital knowledge working products, building a community, monetizing your podcast or your email newsletter, this course is for you. I'd love for you to join us and you can learn more at the link in our show notes. I once had a copy editing teacher tell me not to use the term obviously, because it is condescending. Mm. And, you know, I kind of like write when I'm writing it, I'm kind of saying it like, as an agreement. Like, you know, obviously we all love dogs. Like that's a given, right? But she was like, no, no, no. You, every time you say obviously, you're talking down to your audience, or it can be perceived as talking down to your audience. So I try not to say it as often as possible, but it's one of those filler words that I feel like I always use, as opposed to like, you get me, or are you following me? It's like, we're in agreement, right? Like, obviously we all think this and we're just like touching base, but that's such a good point. When you say obviously, you might be employing the curse of knowledge, and it might be good to clock that for yourself.
That's so interesting. This is sort of a tangent, but my favorite English teacher, the first teacher who was ever like, hey, you're good at, you know, I felt like I was doing well. She would always say, her name was Miss Seika, Sherry Seika. She would always say to use obviously. It was like a great, like in conclusion, she, you know, at the final paragraph of the essay, of the 5-paragraph essay, she always encouraged us to say either clearly or obviously. And I remember distinctly in class her saying, I like to use obviously because it makes people feel dumb. And that's kind of like, she, now that I hear that, I'm like, wait a minute, that is mean and not my vibe at all. But I, it's just funny because you had a teacher tell you one thing. I had a teacher tell me another thing. I mean, this, everything is so subjective, but I agree with your teacher. Like, I don't actually like, because it's sort of saying the same thing as duh, and it's impatient and it's not very nice. And I think the curse of knowledge as a whole forces us to slow down and be kind to someone. And I have this problem a lot with my, I think many of us have been in this experience, this scenario with my mom, mm-hmm. when she's asking me a technology question about her phone, or about, I think this is a good example of this for all of us, or with someone of a different generation where, I mean, I'm this, I was going to say I'm about to be this in 2 seconds, but like, I'm this now, like I can barely work a, you know, I feel like I'm essentially a boomer at this point, but she'll, you know, she'll have a very fine question, but I'll be like, yeah, of course you do the turn it on that, you know, I'm like, I make it, you know, it's because it forces you to slow down and think about your process and consider something, and it's hard to move quickly through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can deeply relate to that as someone who is not a very patient person, and also like my nature, I would say, is impatient, which I'm trying to work on. And that's the task of my life. But also as someone who hates asking for help, I feel like the curse of knowledge is like a double whammy for me, because I'm like, Google it, you know, in my brain sometimes. Like, if you don't know why I'm doing something, like maybe Google it, or like think about it for a second as to why I might be doing this thing. And that's definitely not me at, that's like the shadow side of Michelle, right? When I'm like, I haven't gotten enough sleep and hadn't enough to eat, and like I'm just feeling my most impatient, curse of knowledge is like, we'll bite your head off. But
it's understandable though. Like
it isn't. Like, we all have to start somewhere. And actually, like, you know, when we have the curse of knowledge for ourselves, I think it's actually like a very negative self-talk, where I'll say that to myself, like, don't ask that question, Michelle. That's stupid. Like, just figure it out. Like, why can't you figure this out? You're so dumb. Or if you just took 2 seconds to think about it, like, I would never say that to somebody else, but I would totally say it in my own internal voice. And I think that that's one sneaky way that the curse of knowledge gets us too. It prevents us from being able to start things fresh and new with that like sort of naivete, without that beginner's mind. I think we block ourselves from the process of newness when we're used to the curse of knowledge, when we're used to being experts in something else, because we're afraid of looking stupid, or we're afraid of not having the answers because we feel like we've had answers for such a long time. So I guess it's like probably more a practice in self-kindness and like self-empathy, compassion than even for like somebody else, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It does make the process of whatever you're doing, it slows you down. And that can be really frustrating. Like, to your point about that being you not at your best, it makes sense, because you're trying to get through, you're trying to run a business, you're trying to run a team. So it makes sense that that would be a route you're trying to, it's adaptive, you know, you're trying to move forward, but in the slowing down bit can, you know, doesn't seem like the correct option in that moment. So it's understandable. It takes knowing this curse.
the cool thing about, I think, the curse of knowledge is knowing it, seeing it, clocking it for yourself, and then sort of adjusting your path so that you don't fall into the trap of the curse of knowledge is not only illuminating for whoever you're talking to, but it's also illuminating for you. So first and foremost, when we feel ourselves sort of like stumbling into that trap of the curse of knowledge, just put yourself in the shoes of the person that you're talking to and imagine what it's like to be hearing that knowledge or that information for the very first time. And that typically means that we just need to simplify our language a little bit. We need to slow down. We need to use things like stories to be a little bit more relatable. We want to like avoid jargon, the stuff that honestly kind of takes the humanity out of the doing, out of the like processes. Katie, I was on a call a couple of months ago with someone who wanted to do some partnerships stuff with us at Holisticism. And they had worked in like corporate America and tech for the last couple of years. And they were in their 20s. And they just kept using all of this jargon, like so much jargon about partnerships and blah, blah, blah. And I know that kind of what they were trying to do was come off as like as expert, as someone who I could trust, but really it was just so alienating. And it wasn't because I don't understand partnerships. It was more because I don't really work with people who use a ton of jargon on a day-to-day basis. We all like talk like regular people. And it was, even though I totally could follow what this person was saying, it was just so off-putting that when I got off the call, I was like, ugh, man, I just like don't even want to have a conversation with that person again, because I just want them to talk like a person. Like they're talking like a robot right now. And I just want them to talk to me, Michelle, you know? It was so weird.
Yeah. My old boss at Kind, actually, she would always call that peacocking. And you can spot it from a mile away. Yes. Like, oh, it often comes from insecurity. It's often like, and I've done it too. Yeah. Oh my God, I've done it. I've done it in situations when I feel like I'm not doing well, or I'm uncomfortable in one area. I'm like, let me knock it out of the park over here, because mm-hmm. over there is not great. So like, I'm going to just do the, you know, I can kind of talk my way out of everything, but I'm not really saying anything. And it's very uncomfortable for me. And yes. I can only imagine being on the other side of it, very uncomfortable for everyone involved. And I think we've all been there on both sides. And it's, you can spot it a mile away when someone's peacocking or when someone's trying to like, it's just like, dude, talk to me like I'm a human being and like just level with me here.
You know, I still do that sometimes when I talk to my dad, like when I feel like he's not taking me seriously. And I notice my sister do it too. Sorry, Mel, I'm going to call you out. We both lower our voices many octaves like this. And then we talk more slowly and deliberately like this. And then we both use a bunch of jargon, like synergy on KPIs and converting to blah, 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 like whatever. And it's so interesting, like just how the cadence changes. And that, I mean, gosh, I feel like we just came up with like three other episodes that we should have a conversation about, but
we always do that. That's our curse.
Yes, exactly. The curse.
The idea curse.
Too many ideas. Hey, Michelle breaking in here really quick to tell you a little bit about what's going on inside of the North Node this month. If you don't know, the North Node is our private members community for creatives and intuitive entrepreneurs and nonlinear thinking geniuses who want to marry spirituality, intuition, intellect, running a capitalism critical business, you know, just like being cool, making things and being cool, and self-actualizing along the way. And every quarter we have a different concept that we work through. So as we move into Q4, oh my God, the content, it's so good. Our theme for Q4 is big money energy, which we absolutely adore. And this month in October, I'm actually teaching money shadow work. If you haven't done shadow work before, hold on to your butt. If you have, fantastic. Have you done it around money? It's a whole different ballgame. But this course, we go through together as a community, all 400, 500 of us. And each day there's a different prompt. We answer the questions, we work through together. And it is incredible the revelations that people have, not just about the psychology of money for them, but also the potential blocks or I guess like spaces that they just haven't quite opened up in their mind or in their consciousness yet around what's possible for them. And you know, that sounds all really good in theory, but in practicality, it always leads to finding money, making more money, being more comfortable around money, and honestly, thinking about money as this magical thing, which I don't know, I think it really is. So that's what's up in this month of the North Node. If you're curious about joining, our doors open at the end of the year and in the middle of the year, but you can join the waitlist. Sometimes we pull people off the waitlist when we have people graduate, and you can learn a little bit more at the link in our bio. Okay, that's all I've got for you. See you in the North Node. Okay, let me give you a story. So I was a professional dancer. I've been taking ballet class since I was 2 years old. And at a certain point, you're like in the most advanced class, right? You're in the highest level class and you're learning the hardest, you know, steps and have the hardest combinations and blah, 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 blah. And eventually, like, there's not that many of those classes that you can take all the time because they're so advanced, there's not that many people that can take them. And I remember, you know, going to school in New York and going to take class outside of school, because I would go to class at school and then I'd take even more classes because I wanted to get better and better and better, like on the weekends and at night, and not being able to find the classes that I was looking for. And my teacher, one of my teachers, I kind of told them, and they're like, you should be going to the beginner classes. You should always be go to the beginner classes. If you can't take an advanced class, take a beginner class. Take the very first level class, because you will learn so much and you will get so much better foundationally if you take beginner's classes from the perspective that you're at now. And it was such a good reminder that you can always find challenge in anything. Beginning ballet class is just as hard as advanced ballet class if you take it the right way. And that, like, when we approach something with a beginner's mind, we also understand it more deeply. So coming to the bar from a very basic, with a very basic combination as a really advanced dancer, I started to unlock ideas and concepts and points of the movement that I'd never had the opportunity to unlock before, because I was worried about the intricacies of a more advanced combination. And that helped me know myself and my movement even better, just going back to basics. So using that story to illustrate a point that when we have to explain what we think or how we feel or how we move through the world from a beginner's perspective, it helps us define how we do that. It helps us see our own framework and our way of thinking and you know, exploring and doing. Another way that we can avoid the curse of knowledge is by actively listening. So as opposed to, you know, sort of glazing over when someone's asking questions and really trying to investigate, like, oh, where is this person stuck? Or how could I be more helpful to them as I'm explaining this? Or even like, how can I relate this in real time to what my user is going through? And the last thing I thought of, Katie, was for getting ourselves back to a beginner's mind and sort of avoiding that curse of knowledge is journaling. Obviously, I thought of you. I love going through my old journals and my old emails and my Instagram posts and the things that I was writing, my old Tumblr, embarrassing, to get myself in the headspace of what I was going through when I was a beginner, like when I first started my business or when I first started writing. What was challenging me? What was I complaining about? And using that to help me relate to who I'm talking to, who's currently in that position as a beginner. Like right now, I'm learning something new. I'm learning how to become a financial therapist. And so right now I'm taking a lot of notes for myself as to, like, when I enter and start looking at financial education content, like, how does it make me feel? What don't I like about it? Because I've never been interested in financial education content, but now that I'm dipping my toe in it, I'm starting to notice a lot of things where I'm like, oh, gag, I never want to talk about that, or that's so boring, or that makes me want to break out in hives, and I'm definitely not going to click on that podcast to listen to because it sounds terrible, which I'm sure, you know, I'll lose that connection as I become more and more sort of entrenched in this area. What about you as the journaling queen? Do you ever think about that?
I think that's a really good example of how journaling can be, like, technically very useful. You know, I think people often think about it as processing emotion. Like somebody said to me when the book was coming out and I was doing a lot of, I wrote a book about journaling called Let It Out many years ago.
A classic.
And I would do all this media, you know, I went on like the local news and I was doing so many podcasts talking about the same thing over and over again, journaling. And it got very cursive knowledge-y because I was just, and this, I think this happens to people when they're, you know, doing press or media for something, you're explaining the same thing over and over and over again and trying to keep it fresh for yourself, trying to also like hit your marks and make your points. And I think this comes into play with teaching too, but it got to the point where it was very hard for me to teach about the concepts that I had written in this book because I had sort of, like you said, lost the interest of it. But one thing that sticks out to me is there was a reporter in Detroit who was like, you know, it's so funny. Like, I always think of journaling as being really negative. Like, it's what I go to whenever I'm really upset. That's the only time I would ever journal. And that's, you know, it's sort of this SOS. And that really helped me because I was able to like put myself in the shoes of that individual and be like, oh, actually, okay, there are two. And this became a concept that I've like since used with journaling where I'm like, okay, there are two types of journalers. There are people who are SOS journalers and there are maintenance journalers. And, you know, we can flip flop between the two, but I think putting yourself in the shoes of someone is really helpful. And you can do that with yourself. Like that's what you're saying, Michelle, of putting yourself in your past shoes of, you know, going back into your old journal. And it can be sometimes very uncomfortable sometimes. And I think anytime, you know, I've been on both sides of this entire conversation of, you know, if we look at this from a teaching perspective, I'm trying to explain something that's a bit abstract to begin with. But to your point about steps, like for me to even come up with that curriculum, I had to like completely take a step back, essentially journal, and use this exact tip that you're giving to cleanse myself of the curse of knowledge, so to speak, of be like, wait, how do I even write? Like, how do I need to feel? What combination do I need to get correct? And then it was like, okay, so I need to get the creative combination right. Let's define what a creative combination is. That's module one. Or, you know, as you know, I've taught podcasting, right? And that was kind of the same thing. Like somebody told me to make a podcast course and I was like, I don't really know how to do podcasting. Like, I don't know. And I had to be like, okay, you do know. You just need to sit down and like make some, yep. What do you do? You need to write it down. And what would someone else doing it need to know? You need to figure it out. So anyway, it's so much slower down, which journaling is all about, forces you to do.
Mm-hmm. That's so well said. And one of the reasons that I wanted to dive into the curse of knowledge is because Creators Cashing In is coming up. It's this class that I've been teaching since 2020 on how to create courses, create membership content, create paid content, basically to get paid for what you know, to be a knowledge worker. And so many people, you know, write in as their FAQ or, you know, as a frequently asked question, like, well, what if I don't think I have anything to share? What if I don't, like, I'm not an expert in anything. I'm not like particularly good at anything. And the truth is, that's bullshit. There's a lot that you're really good at. You just don't clock it for yourself because it comes to you naturally. And also, on the flip side, potentially, we are better teachers of the things that we are bad at. For example, I am not a naturally organized person. So I think I'm a very good teacher when it comes to teaching people how to make systems because I had to learn how to do that. Like, it has not come naturally to me. I know what it's like to be frustrated through that process. So you've kind of got these two ends of the spectrum. That's where most people fall. What they're naturally sort of gifted at that they don't even think of as something that they could teach other people because they just take for granted that it comes easily for them. And they're like, well, why would anyone want to learn how to like bake a cake? You just follow the instructions and it comes out well. That's not most people's experience. Or the opposite. Oh, I have to work really hard to like do this thing. Why would anyone want to possibly learn that from me? For that exact reason, I think I've said this on the podcast before, my best dance teachers were the dance teachers who could not do a double pirouette, could not jump high, had, you know, sickled feet, who weren't naturally gifted. They had to work 10 times harder than the sort of naturals, the people that had all the potential to learn how to sort of execute. And that meant that they had so many more tricks up their sleeve to help me learn how to execute. And they were my favorite teachers. So the curse of knowledge, that's why I wanted to bring it up. You know, we have so much at our disposal, not only to share with the world, but also to like potentially monetize and to become teachers of. And there's probably more in your back pocket than you might realize that you have access to. So maybe run your life through the curse of knowledge and perhaps think, where am I avoiding what I'm really good at? And what could I maybe help other people with or teach other people that I've been waiting to become that perfect expert in that I don't need that? Like, it's not necessary. I can just start now.
Those are two really good journaling prompts I think people can take away from this episode and, you know, go into Creators Cashing In with, like, hit the ground running in that course if you filled out some journal prompts on those two points. Yeah. Do you think that the phrase, those who can't do teach, is true or relates to this?
Maybe, but also no. I mean, well, let me divorce myself from just the phrase in general. Those who can't do teach. I think, like, just on surface level, if you can't do something well, like let's say my sickle pickle teachers, you are going to be a better teacher at it because you really have to understand it. You can't, like, innately do it. You're learning step by step. And then I guess the second question of, like, if you're not doing it as an expert out in the world or a genius out in the world, then maybe you're taking the time to teach it. I think that it's not necessarily that, right? It's, there are a lot of people who are experts or geniuses at something, let's say painting, and you're an amazing painter. You're a genius painter. You want to spend your time painting. But I imagine at some point, maybe you don't want to just paint by yourself. Maybe you want to sum up what you've learned over years and years and years of, you know, blood, sweat, and tears with your canvas. And maybe even, like we said before, you want to understand your own process better. And what better way to understand yourself and also share with other people, like a gift with other people, than to teach them how to do it too? I mean, I learn so much about myself as a writer or just as a person, as a creator, when I'm teaching other people how to write and create. It really does inform, like, how I show up to my own practice. What do you think?
I agree. I think that it, again, I keep saying this, but it slows you down. It forces you to think about your process from the questions that you get. And funnily enough, like, well, we talk about George Saunders a lot, you and I, and mm-hmm. I think it's even come up on this show before, but I know that he's spoken often about, he always does his best writing. It's sort of a cliche, but if you have a lot to do, give it to the busy person. And he always says he does the best writing when he's working at Syracuse, when he's teaching at the same time, even though when he goes away to write a book, he doesn't get as much done. So there's something to that. But he's spoken about, I've heard him talk about it on podcasts, that, like, it actually helps his writing, being around the energy of his students, having to share about process. So I think that's one really good example of that. And then, you know, I kind of like the word obviously. Like, I think that phrase is a bit mean. And I think it's condescending. And I don't really like it as a phrase. I think there's truth to it, but I think there's also nuance to it, like you just explained. And funnily enough, as well, also funny, I've been doing some research for another podcast coming soon that you and I are working on. And I've been going through artists and how they make their money. And I'll tell you right now, a big pattern that I've seen with some of our favorite writers, painters, poets, sculptors, filmmakers, of how they've made their photographers, has had some element of teaching, either at the, you know, at several different levels and in different ways. And I don't think that that's a coincidence.
I would agree with that.
I think they feed each other.
I would totally agree. And let's put a pin in that because that's coming later. But that's the curse of knowledge, people. I hope that you enjoyed it. This was a fun one. We could continue to talk about it forever and ever. But that's our show, folks. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Friday Philosophies on the 12th House podcast. And make sure that you tune in next week because I think we have a green room episode coming up, right?
Yeah, sure do.
It's going to be fun.
And more exciting things on this very feed.
It's true.
Thank you for listening.
And we'll see you all next week. Bye.
Bye. The 12th House is produced by me, Katie Dalebout, with theme music by Nathan McKay and edited by the incredible Softer Sound Studio, who you can find more information about in our show notes.